We all know that the date for Thanksgiving shifts from year to year, though it always falls on the fourth Thursday of November. There are also a few days that immediately follow it, now well known in American parlance, Black Friday, when holiday sales begin, and Cyber Monday, when e-commerce gets a boost as people shop online for gifts. A newer and invaluable edition follows those two and returns us full circle to gratitude. It's called Giving Tuesday. No doubt you saw a number of charitable appeals in your inbox right around that day. This year, it fell on December 1st. Hanukkah, the Jewish Festival of Lights, also shifts its start from year to year. And in 2020, it falls on December 10th, with the first candle in the menorah being lit this coming Thursday evening. In the span of 8 days, it covers every day of the week. According to Jewish tradition, part of every holiday should include a routine practice of giving to the less fortunate. Scripture contains countless reminders of this. The Torah teaches that festivals must always include the needy, and Hebrew prophets repeatedly tell people not to forget their moral obligations in the midst of their happy celebrations. The word that often gets translated as charity in English, tzedakah, has a more layered meaning in Hebrew. It can alternately be translated as justice or righteousness. So one who gives to those in need is not so much doing good as acting rightly in a world where injustice never seems to be in short supply, not even in places of plenty, or rather, most conspicuously not in places of plenty. Perhaps the most sophisticated teachings on tzedakah are contained in the teachings of the great medieval Jewish sage Moses Maimonides. He believed that tzedakah was a religious observance with ascending levels. He described it as a ladder leading right to heaven, with the next rung bringing faithful practitioners ever closer to it. There were 8 rungs in all. Climbing each one, people improved their spiritual habits. They learned not to look away, not to harden their hearts, not to close their hands. The lowest level of giving, Maimonides cautioned, was done by persons who gave reluctantly and regretfully. The next lowest is done by a person who gives willingly but less than is fitting. The next is done by a person who gives an appropriate amount but only after being approached and asked. The middle level of giving is done by a person who gives without being asked to do so. A level above that is done by a person who gives not knowing the recipient, but with the recipient knowing the donor's identity. A higher level of giving is done by a person who remains anonymous in making a donation. A still higher level is done by a person who gives anonymously without knowing who the intended recipient is. And the very highest level of giving is done by a person who seeks to partner with others as they become self-sufficient, who offers funds or opportunities or alliances that strengthen others' long-term prospects for the future. Maimonides outlined these levels of giving in his famous Mishnah Torah, a rendering of Jewish law and ethics that to this day remains a foundational text. Born in 1138, Common Era, in Spain to a scholarly family, Maimonides had to leave that country as a boy when a rising Islamic caliphate was expelling Jews who would not convert to Islam. Eventually, he settled in Egypt and started a family there. He trained as a Talmudic scholar and became a rabbi renowned throughout the Jewish diaspora. He also became expert in astronomy, philosophy, and medicine over the course of his studies. Yet when his brother died in a shipwreck that also sunk most of the family fortune, Maimonides went to work as a physician for the royal Muslim family in Cairo. He was a doctor by day and a rabbi by night. He knew immediately and intimately how quickly circumstances could change. What Maimonides also understood was how much a community could support and strengthen all of its members. Living in perpetual exile, medieval Jews knew they had to share resources with one another. The expectation was that they would tithe per the religious requirement, that they would automatically give away a tenth of their income to others, and possibly more as their means allowed. Even those with little were expected to give some of it away. That normalized the practice of giving and to an extent equalized it. People did not give because they were greater than others who were lesser than. They instead gave because the common good mattered to them all. How quickly we can forget the common good nowadays. The term is not one we employ very often in public discourse. The late Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, who died last month and during his lifetime served admirably as chief rabbi of the United Kingdom, said, "We share an identity and a fate and are collectively responsible for the common good. We need to remember that societies are strong when they care for the weak, rich when they care for the poor, and invulnerable when they care for the vulnerable." Too often, he noted, we expect either the state or the economy to correct problems that are on some elementary level, moral ones belonging to the collective, to our collective. We continuously need to rededicate ourselves to a shared moral life, and giving is one way that we can show that we get that. You may be lighting a menorah in your home on Thursday evening, or you may have family or friends or neighbors who are lighting ones in theirs. Either way, what that menorah symbolizes is the lamp the Maccabees lit that first night when they rededicated their sacred site, the temple where they worshipped, after it had been defiled by occupiers in their territory. Hanukkah is a festival of lights that begins with an act of rededication. We may not have occupiers in our lives these days, but we have preoccupations that are rather powerful in their own right. Our giving generously should not be an afterthought at the holidays or at any other time of the year. Rather, it should be integral, an integral part of our life of faith. In addition to any funds we donate, we should also pay attention. Pay attention to the pressing problems that confront us all. The miracle of Hanukkah is that one lamp gives adequate light to reclaim a surrendered sanctuary and to dispel doubts about there actually being enough. What if we trusted that we had adequate resources required for our intended aims? What if our intended aims included righteousness and justice for all? The current pandemic has made it clear how frayed our social fabric has become and how worn the safety net in America is. Charitable responses are important, but so too are corrective measures. As a society, we can choose to give before we are asked to, before situations grow desperate and the needs become too dire. The Hebrew prophets understood that widespread poverty was a judgment not on the underprivileged, but on the privileged who could be their partners instead of their benefactors. At that very highest rung on the ladder of giving, Maimonides taught, were people who supported others in becoming self-sufficient to the extent they were able, making heaven that much closer at hand for everyone. In the Hebrew scriptures, the psalmist declares, "Happy are those who consider the poor." If we seriously consider those who are less fortunate than we get increasingly curious about the circumstances of their lives. We wonder about what they want as well as need, about what might uphold their dignity and give them meaningful choice. This past Thanksgiving, news outlets covered the long lines at food pantries and soup kitchens, where people waited for hours so that they would not go hungry on a day where feasts were set at tables near and far, far and wide. The remedy for this is not simply building our capacity, although in the near term, there may certainly be a call for more locations and volunteers and supplies and funds. The response is to prevent widespread hunger and food insecurity, however we can. During the traditional lighting of the menorah candles ahead of the evening meal, three blessings are said. The first one blesses the god who commands the kindling of the lights. The second blesses the god who performed miracles in ancient days. And the third blesses the god who has given us life and sustained us and brought us to this day. It may be worth our asking, what would we register as a miracle today? If that miracle occurred, how would everyone be able to tell? What would seem different to us? Continuing the thought experiment, we could ask, and what would we have done to brought this miracle to pass? How could we be both blessed and blessing? What might we do, both to keep the soup kitchen going and to make it no longer necessary? How might we be counted among the miracle makers in our own time, proving that what we have now is already more than enough? Justice, justice, you shall pursue, the Hebrew scriptures tell us. Here at UU Wellesley Hills, we frequently quote that line that justice is what love looks like in public. Maimonides and other great rabbis and Jewish sages cared a great deal that the disadvantaged people who were the recipients of tzedakah should not feel demeaned by it in any way, that both their privacy and their pride should be protected. While they insisted there was no shame in accepting material assistance, they often delivered it by stealth, dropping anonymous donations by the doors of poorer households, for instance, or extending a loan that would be forgiven almost immediately afterward. The rabbis taught that the underprivileged did a greater service to the privileged than the converse. They allowed the privileged to practice generosity and act rightly and fulfill the duties that came with their having plenty. These days, we know the rich and multivalent benefits of giving, giving of our time, talent, and treasure to others. Recent research has shown that it is good both for our mental and physical health, and provides us with a much-needed sense of purpose, which we all know is good for our souls. As both a spiritual leader and medical professional, Maimonides was well ahead of his time in intuiting that. But he expanded on that keen insight, adding that as good as it might feel to give, we must do so in ways that do the most good for others, not for ourselves. We must seek to uplift them in every way possible by publicizing their plight, highlighting systemic injustices, advocating for necessary social reforms, and partnering with people around issues of access, equity, and empowerment. Even if we teach the proverbially hungry to fish, it does not do much good if we do not also provide them with fishing poles, with access to a local pier, with a local pier that is well maintained, and with a fish store in the area that is sufficient and safe to eat. It's not enough to simply provide fishing lessons. We need to think about the broadest possible terms of sustainability for the sake of the common good. We need to partner with one another around solving fairly complicated problems. Admittedly, the onslaught of year-end appeals for charitable giving during the holidays can get overwhelming when there are so many expectations of giving. But a bitter irony of the holiday season is how damaging it can be to the self-worth of people who are struggling to survive, who each December have a dread not only of hardship, but of appearing less than. They need to feel included in the radiant festivals in the coming weeks, certainly, but in the coming years and decades as well. Whether or not you personally celebrate Hanukkah by lighting candles on a menorah, its 8 days and nights give us ample time to recall Maimonides' ladder of giving, with its many rungs to climb and its 8 levels of ascent, as a way for us to conceivably make some heaven on earth and share more fully the considerable bounty of the creation that has sustained us all. Yes, Giving Tuesday may come but once a year, but every day is an excellent opportunity to give of what we have got as a routine practice of gratitude, as a heartfelt devotional gesture, and as a modest posture of perpetual thanksgiving.